Issues Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely on you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. Please consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support.
The future of the world is not secularism. It is multi-faith.
If faith doesn't have a major role, then the risk is of a process of globalization without values, without belief, without conviction.
There was a lot of interfaith efforts with Copts and Muslims worshiping together. Let's hope that continues and do whatever we can to make that the future instead of driving out religious minorities.
Either Christ can say it into being or your eating does. Now, for my money, I'm big on letting Christ do what he says he can do. And even if I don't believe it, it's still the body of Christ.
This is Mike from New Jersey, and yes, even Blue State Reformed Presbyterian Calvinists love Issues Etc.
It's hard to believe, it really is hard to believe, I speak only for myself, how close we are to another presidential election. And really the thing that's close is not so much the election, but the election season, which begins earlier and earlier. Of course, that's driven largely by the need to raise a lot of money. If you're interested in the White House, whether you hold it or you don't, you need to raise a lot of money to make that attempt. And so it begins speculation as to who will be running against the incumbent president, President Barack Obama, and how vulnerable he might be now and then in 2012. We'll start out this Tuesday's Issues Etc. live this March the 8th, talking with Mark Hemingway of the Weekly Standard about the GOP presidential field. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Thanks for tuning us in. A little bit later on this Tuesday, Deaconess Pam Nielsen joins us. We'll be talking about the temptation of Jesus. That leads us very nicely from the end of Epiphany into the beginning of Lent. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse will join us in the second hour of the program. There's an author and a college professor, you might have seen this on television, who went to do some research in Japan to write a book. And while there, she decided that she didn't want to be a mother anymore, at least not a full-time mother. So when she came back, she told her husband and her children she was done. She divorced her husband and left him full custody of the children. And she says, your children are no worse off, and they're still getting everything that they need, and this is what she needs to do for herself. We'll talk about absent motherhood with Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse in the second hour of the program. Then Dr. Ryan McPherson will join us. We'll talk natural law and the family. Our call-in number for the next 2 hours, 877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet at @issuesetc or chime in on who you think will be the front runners in the GOP field for president at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc, facebook.com/issuesetc. Mark Hemingway is a regular guest and online editor for the Weekly Standard. Mark, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me back, Todd.
Congratulations on your new position at the Weekly Standard.
Oh, thanks a lot. Yeah, no, it's terrific working there.
The perception is, even this far out from 2012, that President Barack Obama is extremely vulnerable. How vulnerable do you think he is?
Well, extremely might be overstating things a bit. Vulnerable, absolutely. We have to look at a couple of factors here. One is simply how the presidential elections happen. It's not simply a popularity contest. You've got to look at an electoral map because we've got to add up the electoral votes. And if you look at Obama's approval ratings in a lot of these swing states that he won in 2008, Indiana, Virginia, Colorado, places like that, he's not looking so great. And not only that, a lot of these states, these swing states like Wisconsin and Wisconsin and other places where, you know, it's going to be very close, the legislatures and the governor's ships flipped, became Republicans in the last election. So what that means is, that they're going to be controlling the election laws and all sorts of things that'll make it slightly harder for Democrats to get a leg up. So, you know, when you start adding up the electoral votes, it's not nearly as clear a path to victory as he had in 2008.
Who has announced and who is presumed to be running on the GOP side?
It was interesting. Gallup was saying, was talking about this the other day, the polling organization, about how it was unusual that there was absolutely no clear front runner this far out. There have been very few that have, you know, officially announced, if any, I don't think, actually. But the ones that are presumed to be running are Tim Pawlenty, the former governor of Minnesota, Newt Gingrich, the former speaker, Republican Speaker of the House, Mitt Romney, former Massachusetts governor, and Mike Huckabee, to some extent. There's been a lot of speculation about Sarah Palin running, and she's done a lot of things that would indicate that she is running. She's done a lot of things that would indicate that she's not running. So things are just, you know, very, very up in the air. What is going on right now is there's a lot of hand-wringing in sort of Republican circles because they worry that none of these candidates are really strong enough to take on Obama, and there's a lot of more prominent Republicans that have maybe better governing track records or more credibility with the conservative base, and they wish that these guys would, you know, run. I'm talking about Paul Ryan, the Budget Committee Chairman in the House, who's very young and very, very competent. A lot of grassroots conservative credibility. Chris Christie, the governor of New Jersey, who's just, you know, hit like a supernova in Washington, D.C. He has an uncanny way with voters, and the media seems to like him, which is, you know, unbelievable for a Republican candidate. And Mitch Daniels in Indiana, who they're a little nervous about because some things he's been saying about social issues, but he's got a record as a rock-solid conservative, and his track record as governor of Indiana is fantastic.
Were you surprised when Ron Paul won the straw poll at CPAC?
No. I think he won the straw poll at CPAC last year, too. He has just this incredibly devoted, you know, following. You know, I don't know how familiar you are with sort of the libertarian subculture, but these people are very devoted, and they are, you know, tend to be obsessed with their particular issues. I think it's less a reflection of what the conservative movement thinks than just the fact that there's this, you know, cult of personality out there that supports Ron Paul. You know, that said, you know, one of the interesting things about Obama being in the White House is it's sort of rekindled this fusionist dynamic, is the word they usually use, that, you know, William F. Buckley was a big proponent of at National Review, you know, decades ago, was, you know, putting together sort of the best of libertarian ideas and fiscal issues with some common sense conservatism on the social side and creating a Republican ideology out of that. And libertarians they were sort of dissatisfied with the big government ways of the Bush era, and now they're sort of coming home to Republicans in the Obama era because, you know, things have sort of gotten worse on the big government front. So it's an interesting dynamic to watch.
Of those that are presumed, and here I'm thinking mostly about Romney, Gingrich, and Pawlenty, which of these are considered, if anything, kind of the strongest person presenting themselves?
Well, Romney obviously has the biggest name recognition and probably the best, like, campaign apparatus sort of left over from when he ran last time. So it's weird. He's like, he's in this weird position. I can't remember who it was. Somebody said that he's the presumed front runner. So everyone thinks he's the front runner, but at the same time, no one thinks he can win, which is very weird place to be in. I think Gingrich is known as a very smart guy who has lots of great ideas, but he's got a long way to go before he sort of builds credibility as someone who's electable for president. Pawlenty just isn't that well known at this point in time, and but, you know, he had a good track record as governor, and he's got a very good, likable personality. He's good on the campaign trail. And one guy I should have mentioned earlier, and I'm going to go ahead and mention now, is John Huntsman, the former governor of Utah, who was Obama's ambassador to China. He is known as being a very competent businessman good fundraiser, and it was a popular governor, though he is of a liberal sort of Republican streak, for, which is kind of unusual being from a governor from Utah. So, you know, and he's also Mormon as well. So who knows how that will affect things.
With about a minute before we take our first break here, Mark, how did you interpret President Obama's recent praise of what Mitt Romney did as governor on the issue of health care reform?
Well, this is a really interesting question. It's very true. Much of the Obama healthcare plan was modeled after a lot of the things that were in Romney's healthcare plan in Massachusetts. Romney doesn't seem to want to disavow this as explicitly as he should, if he's planning on running for president, because it's going to hurt him in the long run. But it's kind of undeniable, and it's just a way for Obama to get digs in at Republicans to point out that one of their own, you know, was peddling the same ideas that have so many Republicans up in arms right now.
Mark Hemingway is our guest. He's online editor for the Weekly Standard. We're going over the GOP presidential field such as it is this far out. It's Tuesday, March the 8th. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. We're coming to you live. I want to hear from you. This break is a great time to give us a call and to tell us what you think about the GOP presidential field. Who do you think will win the nomination for the GOP? Who would you hope would win the GOP nomination? 877-623-6943. 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email right here in the studio. We get them in real time. Talkback@issuesetc.org. Talkback@issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet @issuesetc or leave your thoughts on the GOP presidential field at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc, facebook.com/issuesetc. 10 more minutes with Mark Hemingway of the Weekly Standard on the other side of this break. Then Deaconess Pam Nielsen will join us. We'll be talking about the temptation of Jesus. Of course, Lent begins Wednesday this week. That's tomorrow. And with that begins this theme that, at least if you follow the historic form of Christian worship, always begins there. In the wilderness with Jesus, post-baptism, being tempted by the devil. That's our subject in about 15 minutes here on Issues Etc.
Beautiful shoreline, the calming sound of Lake Michigan, the glorious sunrise, the warm June afternoons. This is Wisconsin Lakeshore Luther Hostel on the campus of Concordia University, Wisconsin, June 11th through the 14th, 2011. The program? Dr. Paul L. Meyer, professor of history at Western Michigan University and frequent guest on Issues Etc. The topic? The Crescent and the Cross, Islam and Christianity. Dr. Meyer will cover the historical background of Muhammad, the rise of Islam around the world, the beliefs and practices of this world religion, and what its future may hold. In addition, the four-day, three-night Luther Hostel includes interesting day trips to area attractions. For details how you can register for Wisconsin Lakeshore Luther Hostel, sponsored by the Concordia Bible Institute on the campus of Concordia University, Wisconsin, visit the Concordia Bible Institute website at www.concordiabible.org or phone 262-243-4343.
Smartest listeners in radio, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Have you heard of the CLCC? In Hosea 4, we see, "My people are destroyed by lack of knowledge." The Confessional Lutherans for Christ Commission can help educate Lutherans on being Lutheran. We treasure our Lutheran beliefs and think that all Lutherans would if they learn what we believe, teach, and confess. So visit our website, www.theclcc.org. Check out what we have to offer. Get on our mailing list, or better yet, join us. And maybe encourage your pastor to hold a seminar in your area. Just go to theclcc.org.
Well, I think that's a very good question.
Check out our new YouTube video, Good Question, issuesetc.org, and click support. Good questions, better answers, Issues Etc. Watch the short YouTube video, Good Question, today. Just go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org.
Well, you know, that's a good question.
That's a very good question.
Yeah, that's a good question.
No, that's a good question.
We'll be right back. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Mark Hemingway is our guest. We're talking about the presidential field in the Republican side going into the 2012 presidential elections. He's online editor for the Weekly Standard. Mark, I had one more question about President Obama praising Mitt Romney's healthcare reform efforts in his state. I don't know about the president's motive here, but might it have the effect of taking some of the wind out of Romney's sails if he has presidential prospects?
That is exactly what it is. I mean, he's trying to take this and hang it around his neck, you know, like an anchor, because, you know, indeed, it's not the Republican base. I mean, fully over half the American people seem to loathe this legislation and have consistently since it was passed. So, you know, Obama's already, you know, tied to it, so he's going to have to defend it regardless, whereas Romney might want to try and run from it. And this is, you know, just another way of sort of knocking another guy out of the field, or at least trying to.
Will Romney's Mormon affiliation hurt him in the Republican primary?
You know, that is a really good question, and it's also a really good question because we now have two Mormons that are in the presidential hunt right now, Huntsman as well. It's a little interesting in the sense that Romney has been much more overt and about his faith publicly than Huntsman has been. I heard someone the other day describe Huntsman as a cafeteria Mormon, which is, I don't know if that may be overstating it a bit, but there's some truth in that. Romney is much more closely identified with the church than Huntsman is. We'll see. But, you know, I don't know. My general sense of it is that Romney suffered so many slings and arrows in the last presidential election because of his faith, because of his flip-flops on some of these social issues like abortion and other things like that, that the GOP base seems to feel like Romney is a guy that has sort of, you know, paid his dues there, and they're willing to give him a chance a second time around. Also, though, you have to remember that Obama was a big, you know, blank slate in the last election. So values voters now have a very clear contrast. And the question is they going to take someone whose theology they disagree with, but they probably agree with his values? Or are they going to vote for someone who they don't agree with his values at all? You know, particularly after some of the things he's done, you know, like, you know, with abortion and Obamacare and other things like that, that have really set the intent out for values voters. In fact, the Barna Group just did a survey, and they found that Obama's approval rating among evangelicals was 6%. That is right. 6%.
Really?
And fully, 94% did not like Obama. So, yeah. So, you know, and again, this was a group, again, that he had made inroads in 2008. And, you know, it looks like a lot of these voters aren't going to be there for him the second time around.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about the Tea Party. Do you think that they maintain, do they continue to be the force of nature, however big or small, going into 2012?
I absolutely think they do. And what's interesting to me is, and you're not seeing as much of it as you did before, you know, prior to the election, because everybody was sort of focused on the campaigns at the federal level. What you're seeing now is you're seeing the Tea Party, you know, once these people are active in politics, they're getting more active at the local level in between elections, and that's going to make a big difference. Like, for instance, the Tea Party is very heavily involved in redistricting efforts and other things like that around the country. And redistricting was already something that was naturally going to favor Republicans, and the Tea Party is getting in there and, you know, getting involved and making their voices heard about, you know, how they want things done. And there are other issues, too. Like, I don't know if you remember, Representative Chris Lee, who was the Republican in upstate New York, who got caught trolling for an affair on Craigslist and resigned. Well, the state party in New York wants to sort of, you know, self-select a wealthy pro-choice candidate to fill that seat, and the Tea Party in the state is now up in arms and wants to support a rock-solid conservative Iraq War Silver Star winner for that seat, and not let the Republican establishment get away with picking losers and winners like they normally do. So there's a lot of little things going around. You're not going to necessarily hear about it on the national news, but they're very active at the grassroots level, which is kind of where the Tea Party should be and where they can do the most good.
Dave in Troy, Michigan says, I like Tim Pawlenty of Minnesota or Chris Christie of New Jersey. Because of his money and name recognition, Mitt Romney probably has the inside edge. Your thoughts there, Mark?
No, I think that that's not a bad assessment of it. I mean, I think that Chris Christie, for instance, is like clearly a grassroots favorite. You know, I don't know if you've seen in the internet videos with him talking to people in town halls and stuff. He's got a way with people, and it sets off, you know, a lot of sparks. But, you know, simply being able to, you know, present yourself well isn't necessarily the end-all be-all of a presidential campaign. You got to be able to run an organization. You got to be able to raise money. That's a huge part of it. And Mitt Romney is a guy that is very, very good at those things. Then that's the reason why everybody says he's the presumed front runner right now. So, you know, that assessment's pretty on. And as for Pawlenty, a lot of people like him. I've seen him on the campaign trail. I saw him campaign for John McCain back in 2008, and I've seen him in a few other forums. And I think people underestimate him at their peril. I mean, I think he's a very savvy, very likable politician.
You mentioned Mike Huckabee earlier in our conversation. What should we know about him with regard to presidential prospects?
Well, Mike Huckabee is in a very different place than he was in 2008. Main reason is that the Republican Party is much more conservative on fiscal and regulatory issues. And Huckabee was sort of, when he was governor of Arkansas there for, I guess it was almost three terms, he had a reputation for being sort of a fiscal liberal. And he, if you read his books and other things like that, he is not nearly as averse to, you know, using government regulatory power to do things as the standard Tea Partier is. So a lot of that stuff that wasn't nearly as big an issue in 2008 is going to be a big issue for him in this election because things, because the electorate has shifted so far to the right for Republicans. So even though he's very likable, got great name ID, and people really seem to like him, I think once the gloves start coming off in a primary and people start unearthing Huckabee's record on a lot of these fiscal and regulatory issues, he might be in a lot more trouble.
You mentioned that President Obama, when he won his first term, was largely a blank slate upon which many in the country projected their hopes and their aspirations. Is there anyone in the Republican Party, can someone else pull that off in the next election, kind of being that blank slate, things are still as bad as they were? I mean, in some ways worse. A lot of the things that President Obama ran against, if you will, are still persisting in our national life. Can someone pull that off on the Republican side?
I can't imagine that's the case. I mean, this is a very different election. I mean, remember the last election was the first election, you know, we'd had in I can't remember how many years it was, but it was a long time, decades, where there was, you know, basically no presumed front runner on either side. It was a wide open field and all of these things. And that had a lot to do with Obama's biography, you know, being African American, being so young, being, you know, in public service, you know, at the federal level for not very long. He could get away with that. I don't think there's many candidates that, like, personally fit that bill. But more than that, though, you look at the problems of what we're facing right now and what the electorate cares about right now in terms of, you know, fiscal issues, the deficit, you know, public sector unionism dragging down state and local governments. I mean, all these things. I mean, these are very tangible issues. I mean, this is going to be a green eyeshade, you know, policy election. You know, people are looking at the bottom line. It's going to be about, you know, accounting. What do the numbers say? What can we do, you know, to get entitlements under control and things like that? You know, things are going to be focused much more on specifics in the next election than necessarily on, like, what's the quote-unquote general direction we want America to go in, the way it was framed in the last election. And I think that's in part because things are so bad right now, and because things are bad economically and otherwise, people are much more engaged. They care about the specifics of policy because they care about, you know, getting things back on track as fast as possible. And it's not to say that things weren't bad, in 2008, but they were just sort of, you know, really starting to hit bottom right as the election was happening. And now we've got, you know, people have been unemployed for 2 years and they've had nothing to do but sit around and try and figure out, you know, what the government's doing to make things worse or better.
You mentioned before Newt Gingrich might have a hard time distinguishing himself as electable. What are his strengths and his weaknesses going into 2012?
Well, I'm not sure that to the extent that voters do remember him from the 1990s when he headed up the Republican Party, that their view of him was entirely favorable. Remember, you know, he led the charge for impeaching Bill Clinton when he was a massive hypocrite in his own personal life in terms of some of the affairs that he'd had and some of his ugly divorces and other things like that. You know, Gingrich has spent some time reinventing himself. He converted to Catholicism a few years ago and seems to have taken his faith and other things much more seriously. And I think, you know, he wants people to see that side of him. But I don't know. I mean, he was seen as kind of reckless at the time. You know, he engineered a government shutdown at a time when, overspending at a time when the economy was booming and spending wasn't that much of an issue. And a lot of people just thought it was kind of reckless.
Mark Hemingway is an online editor for the Weekly Standard. You'll find a link to his columns under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Mark, it's always a pleasure. Keep up the good work. Again, congratulations on the post with the Weekly Standard, and thanks for being our guest.
Anytime, guys. Thanks a lot. I listen to the program and think it's terrific.
Thanks. Well, when we come back, Deaconess Pam Nielsen will be our guest. She's going to join us to talk about and to help us kind of kick off pre-Lent, pre-Ash Wednesday, the theme that dominates much of Lent. It is, of course, the temptation of Jesus. The account in Matthew's gospel will suffice. That's where we'll go on the other side of the break. In the second hour of the program, Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris will be our guest. We'll be talking to her about a woman, an author, and a college professor who decided to leave her husband and children because, well, she no longer wanted to be a full-time mom. She says it's worked out great for everybody. Then Dr. Ryan McPherson will join us. We'll talk natural law and the family to round off today's issues, etc. When we come back, Deaconess Pam Nielsen and the temptation of our Lord. Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues, etc. 300. Trinity Lutheran, Bridgeton, Missouri; Calvary Lutheran, Elgin, Illinois; Advent Lutheran, Zionsville, Indiana; Redeemer Lutheran, Fort Worth, Texas; Holy Cross Lutheran, Albany, Oregon; St. John's Lutheran, Evanston, Indiana; Mount Calvary Lutheran, San Antonio, Texas; Good Shepherd Lutheran, Boise, Idaho; Village Lutheran, Ladue, Missouri; Emmanuel Lutheran, Osceola, Iowa; St. Paul Lutheran, Clarinda, Iowa; Trinity Lutheran, Lebanon, Missouri; Mount Calvary Lutheran, Excelsior Springs, Missouri; the Lutheran Church of Our Savior, Cupertino, California; Christ Our Savior Lutheran, Freeburg, Illinois; and Peace Lutheran, Neenah, Wisconsin. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Support, the Issues Etc. 300.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Ohio was the first state to pass a law on partial birth abortion. It paved the way for the federal ban and focused Americans on the unborn child. Now, Ohio is again on the cutting edge. Pro-life legislators have introduced the Heartbeat Bill. It would prohibit abortion when the heartbeat of the unborn child is detected. This happens between 18 and 28 days after conception. The bill could be another game changer because it demonstrates the humanity of the unborn child early in pregnancy. Pro-abortion activists are terrified of this concept. A 9-week unborn baby will testify before an Ohio legislative committee by showing the child's heartbeat with ultrasound. I'll keep you posted on this brilliant strategy. It takes the window to the womb and flings it wide open.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.